Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. David James Savarese grew up in Grinnell, Iowa. He's a poet and a prose writer. He graduated with honors from Oberlin College in May of 2017. He is also autistic and non-speaking, but he found a way to tell his story through the new documentary Deej, which just received a Peabody Award and will be shown at the Julian Dubuque International Film Festival in Dubuque on Saturday, April 28th. At 2:30 and 4 p.m. David James Savarese's father, Ralph Savarese, is with us to talk about his son and this extraordinary film. He's also a professor and chair in the Department of English at Grinnell College. Hello, Dave. Hello, Ralph. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Wonderful. So this film was shot over a period of 6 years. It started when your son was still in high school. Can you tell me how the project, how this film project came about?
Sure. I actually published a memoir about adopting DJ from foster care when he was six. At that time, we were in Florida, living in Florida. And when the memoir came out, I was on NPR, on the Diane Rehm Show, and a bunch of filmmakers heard it and contacted us and said they wanted to do a documentary. So the documentary picks up, my book ends with him in sixth grade, and the documentary picks up in late eighth, early ninth grade.
And you were concerned when all of these filmmakers contacted you. You had some reluctance about engaging in a film project, right?
That's exactly right. So my book ends with a chapter that DJ wrote called It's My Story. And in the chapter, he tells me all sorts of things I got wrong. And even more important, he says that my liberal politics about women on welfare clashed with his experience of his particular birth mother, who really did not treat him well. And so we had arranged that he would write the chapter and I wouldn't see it until the book was published. Because I really do believe that it's important for everybody to be able to represent themselves. So what I was concerned about with the film was that DJ would simply become an object that somebody would film, and that he would not play a part in crafting how people should see his life and his kind of neurological difference.
Well, I want to play a clip from the film, which gives us an idea of how prominent DJ's voice is in this film. This was taken, again, at the close to the beginning of filming, when he was in high school in Grinnell in an English class. And we'll hear his thoughts voiced through a computer and the voices of his teacher and other students as well.
Let's talk about how this may or may not be a tragedy, if it's somewhat maybe the fault of a character, a tragic flaw that the character has. One more. DJ.
In stark rural poverty, Ethan Frome perseveres and creates a vibrant internal life of hope and love, planting seeds of life and joy. Tending to them in the midst of desolation requires fortitude.
I agree that all his hope comes from inside. Nothing is given him, like, to give hope to him.
Until I learned to read and write, people thought I had no mind. Reading and writing are rarely taught to non-speaking autistics.
Okay, anybody else?
Our silence makes some estimate us as incapable. And soon we are left out of anything meaningful.
Foreshadowing we talk about. Can you think of other examples of foreshadowing in the story?
Again, that's a clip from the film Deej, a documentary that shows us the life of David James Savarese as he becomes independent and goes off to college. Ralph, tell me how Deej was able to really take control of this narrative in the film.
So one thing is, I mean, we contractually negotiated with the filmmaker, and it was a long and difficult process, so that actually in the contract it says that DJ has a, quote, full share of editorial control. The contract also says that all of the words in the film that are not just spoken by characters but the voiceover would be DJ's alone, and he would have final say about what he wants to say, and that the director and other producer, Rob Roy, and he would have to come to agreement on the shape, the narrative arc of the film. And so, I mean, with those protections, we went forward. I would say that the desire to do the film was DJ's. And so you see, for example, DJ applying to college. There's a scene at Coe College where he's just filled with anxiety. It was not me that said we should bring a film crew into the college application and interviewing process, but he really wanted people to see what was possible, what the challenges were, but also how those challenges can be negotiated and circumvented.
Before we really get into talking about the narrative arc that the film takes and the journey that it shows, let's talk more about your family. How is it that DJ came into your life?
So my wife is an inclusion specialist. We were in Florida, and she was working with a single mother, DJ's birth mother, who had very, very serious drug and alcohol problems. And she said to me, you know, it would really be great if you maybe spent a little bit of time with this very young boy who seems to be particularly distraught and not doing well. He was very shortly after that taken from his birth mother's home and then was in foster care. While he was in foster care, I would meet with him maybe once a week and just play with him in a kind of big brother like scenario, and he was terrifically abused in foster care, and that deepened the involvement to the extent that I sort of became his guardian ad litem. Meanwhile, we're trying to help his birth mother with drug rehab and alcohol counseling, even paying her rent, and that really didn't work out. And then she disappeared, and at that point we were in so deep, and we really cared about DJ, that we started entertaining the idea of adopting him.
When you did bring DJ into your home, now you had this relationship with him, a friendly relationship, a big brother type relationship. How did you and your wife, in getting to know DJ, come to understand what was going on inside his mind? I mean, he clearly is a brilliant man, but he was not just non-speaking, but nonverbal at that time because no one had taught him to read or write. It was very difficult to communicate with him, right?
That's correct. So, I mean, I think my wife's experience seeing the labels that are placed upon children with disabilities and having had many experiences where there's a gap between the sort of devastating label and the lived reality of what a child can do, that's really important. I'd worked in the field of disability studies and knew how much stigma gets attached to very different people with very different kinds of bodies. And so, but more important, beyond any of that, we grew to really care for him. I remember he was unbelievably beaten in foster care. You can even hear it in my voice right now. And I was called to the hospital. And I taught him one sign. His communication by this point was the American Sign Language sign for more. And I taught it to him while tickling. And I go into that emergency room, and he is black and blue. I mean, all over. We're talking about a 3.5-year-old. And he made the sign for more. And so beyond anything intellectual, there was this sense, here was this kid who was bonded to us. And we were bonded to him. And we didn't know that this story would end with him winning, or it hasn't ended, but would result in him winning a Peabody,
right,
or graduating Phi Beta Kappa from Oberlin. What we knew was he deserved a decent life, as all kids in foster care do. And we also knew that we had resources that could perhaps reveal that he can do more, that he could learn.
You, in the film, DJ shares that really he had a breakthrough when he was in fourth grade, that through years of using pictograms and you and your wife teaching him words, teaching him to read, that in fourth grade, things really clicked. Tell me about that breakthrough.
So, you know, early on, this is quite common working with autistic kids. We had photographs of everything. We would make picture schedules of an entire day with photographs. So you'd have a photograph if he was liked having bagels for breakfast. You'd have a photograph of the bed and the morning filled with sunlight, a photograph of a bagel, a photograph of a bath, a photograph of, okay, now the car. Everything in our house had a photograph, a kind of American Sign Language depiction, and the actual word. It was a communicative, rich environment. And I really do believe that all of that stuff laid the groundwork. And we asked him to communicate with photographs, make little stories, tell us what he wanted. We taught him how to point at, you know, do you want Oreos or do you want ice cream for dessert? But at the same time, you know, he's learning things in school. And Emily recounts a little anecdote in my book, Reasonable People, about reading the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. And DJ, up until that point, had simply provided fact-based questions. You know, who's in the story? Who does what? But suddenly, he in fourth grade, he types out, "Where a dad?" Because it was a mom and a child and this, you know, giant. And you know, when you start seeing that, the emergence of a mind that is taking what it's reading, but also relating it to his own life. You heard that in the clip you played. He's writing, I mean, he's talking about Ethan Frome, but he's talking about living in desolation. And he spent almost 3 years in foster care. No one's teaching him anything. He's been abandoned and abused. I mean, that young man knows something about desolation and trying to find the fortitude to imagine that you could allow yourself to hope for something better.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Ralph Savarese. He's a professor and chair in the Department of English at Grinnell College. We're talking today about his son, David James Savarese, who is a poet and a writer. He is also the subject and one of the filmmakers behind a new documentary. It's called Deej, which just received a Peabody Award. It will be shown at the Julian Dubuque International Film Festival in Dubuque on Saturday, April 28th at 2:30 and 4 p.m. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Right now we're talking about a new film called Deej. The film follows the life of David James Savarese as he graduates from high school and goes on to Oberlin College. He prefers to be called Deej. That's where the title of the film comes from. And it tells his story. He is autistic and non-speaking, and he is the one who tells his story in this film. The film just received a Peabody Award. It will be shown at the Julian Dubuque International Film Festival in Dubuque on Saturday, April 28th at 2:30. And Ralph Savarese, Deej's father, is here with me now. And Ralph, you were talking about how when Deej really learned to communicate with you, how he was able to express his emotions and express his feelings, express his ideas. And he has such a remarkable mind. He is a gifted poet. And I want to play a poem that's in the film. And this is not voiced through Deej's voice generation software. This is voiced by a narrator in the film. But this is a poem that he wrote about his birth mother.
Mother of the 12-pack, mother, did you miss me? Your jeans place their rough hands on my face. They kiss me as you never did. They cry, they tousle my hair. Giving thanks to God, they say, it's you, you as me. The prodigal son has returned, spitting image of a lucky strike whore, snarling, wistful me, who once thought anger was a kind of redemption. Its obsidian aftermath, a twisted me, a heart as black and buried as a Pompeian's. It's me, me as you, I say to the mirror's me, to the you lost in love's reflection. You were poor, alcoholic. You sold your body in Kissimmee, Florida. Thrice you tried to drown me in the bath. Thrice you stopped yourself. Oh, Rhonda. Oh, David James.
Again, that's a poem that was voiced in the movie Deej. Ralph, when Deej first started writing poetry, he's such an extraordinary poet, extraordinary voice. What was your reaction?
Well, you know, I'm an English professor, so certainly poetry is not foreign to me. I've always had lots of writers in our house. Interestingly, DJ thinks of poetry as his native language. He talks about the melody of words. And I remember even reading a Dylan Thomas poem called Fern Hill out loud to my wife. And one of DJ's first typed utterances was, "Very great sound, very great sound." And so he's very much drawn to the patterning of poetry, the musical sort of sonic patterning. He had terrific teachers. A teacher in the school system, Bill Rudolph, really worked with him wonderfully. And then when he went to Oberlin, he had a double major in anthropology and in creative writing. And in fact, the man who reads that poem was one of his creative writing instructors at Oberlin. And they gave him lots of training. And it was remarkable to watch what was a gift, clearly a gift, develop and mature. That poem is skilled. It's in the form, a Persian form called the ghazal. All of that elaborate repetition of the word me, which he even seems to find in the word Kissimmee, the town in Florida. So it's marvelous. It gives him a way of talking about his life. In fact, in the film, he says something like, "Poetry has allowed me to say all the terrible things I know and to get control over my emotions."
Toward the end of the film, as I mentioned, it follows his journey to college and his journey toward independence, which is a very difficult journey for him and for all of you. I mean, for the three of you, you really worked so hard together to make this possible. And he feels frustrated by the filming of this yep. process. And he says it makes him feel guilty because it sort of shows in sharp relief what his dream is costing all of you, although you and your wife have made it very clear that he has the right to dream and you want to support him in this. How does he feel about the final product, about this film?
Well, that's the key moment, right, where you really do see the friction between the two collaborators, one autistic, one not. And his partner really thought for there to be a realistic view, he needed to focus more on this cost. And DJ really resented that. I think this is a very challenging, almost unanswerable dilemma. Because at the end of the day, I would say the danger here in focusing on the cost to us is to imagine, we go out of our way. We do some extraordinary things. Emily lives in the town of Oberlin to help manage the support services. But having kids is a difficult proposition of any kind. And parents devote themselves quite frequently to their welfare at the expense of their own happiness, not happiness, but their own satisfaction, let's say. And that's just not how we, the three of us, were lined up. What people forget is the enormous reward and pleasure of watching this young man develop and grow. On my most tired days, I sit there and I think this is a testament to what is possible. And there are so many kids in our educational system, whether autistic or poor or black or Latino, who have not been given this kind of opportunity to shine.
Well, and those kids are clearly never far from DJ's mind.
They aren't. And in fact, one of the things that was really shocking to me was to discover you know, in sixth, seventh grade, when he was really not sleeping well, that he was feeling guilt and pressure. He just couldn't believe that in some kind of lottery, he had found a family, and a family that was going to promote inclusion and give him these opportunities. And that's a brutal insight. And so that I think is what drove him to say, yes, bring the camera crew into my college interviews. Let it see me have a meltdown. I've got to show people, seeing is believing, that it's possible that other non-speaking autistics and other disabled kids deserve a chance to live a meaningful life.
How has he reacted to winning the Peabody?
Well, we only found out Monday night at 11 p.m., and Tuesday and Wednesday have been, it's astonishing. Absolutely astonishing to everybody. And it's wonderful because on Facebook, so many autistic self-advocates all over the United States, I would even say the world, have chimed in this effort to celebrate what autistic talent can accomplish. And that's what this is about. And he's very proud of himself for sticking to his guns with his partner and with the executive producers who wanted to go in a slightly different way. And I think that's been really satisfying to have this film, this progressive film about autism, be recognized. But he's also hoping the film opens eyes. I think at the end of the film, he says something like, justice will open eyes. He wants other folks to have the chances he's had.
Well, I hope everybody gets an opportunity to see this film. I mentioned it's going to be at the Julian Dubuque International Film Festival. Winning a Peabody Award hopefully also broadens the opportunities for it to be shown. Do you know what the future holds for the film?
Sure. I mean, he's already done 50, 60 screens. They won the Best of Festival at the International Disability Film Festival in San Francisco in November, and lots of colleges and universities. He was at Ohio State talking about the film. That's why you're not actually hearing from him today. They're traveling. He's got events lined up all through the summer, and more are coming in. And you know, we're also trying to have a balanced life, if that's possible. You know, as a family,
right. Well, and he graduated in May of 2017, as you mentioned, with a double major. What are his plans? What's he up to?
So he was very fortunate to win an Open Society Foundation Youth Human Rights Fellowship for a year and a half, where he is trying to set up literacy through art and poetry programs that he will take around the country to other non-speaking autistics and promote this, what he calls artful advocacy. So that's and the film has turned out to be a wonderful sort of jetpack, as it were, as it's, you know, fires him off to all of these different places where he can talk about this project through the Open Society Foundation. After that, I don't know. I mean, I joke that, maybe he'll run for president. I mean, the great thing about DJ is that he surprises us constantly with what his ambitions are. And it's been a delight as his dad to follow.
Absolutely.
What he's going to do.
Well, Ralph Savarese, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about the film.
Ralph Savarese is a professor and chair in the Department of English at Grinnell College. He's also the author of a book called Reasonable People. And today he was here as a dad. He is David James Savarese's father. And David James Savarese's story is told in the new documentary, Deej, which just received a Peabody Award. It will be shown at the Julian Dubuque International Film Festival in Dubuque on Saturday, April 28th at 2:30. And April is Autism Awareness Month, and I want to bring Chris Steinmetz into the conversation. She's executive director of Autism Society of Iowa. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, we were just talking about DJ Savarese's really remarkable story that sheds light on his extraordinary mind, on the extraordinary potential that so many people with autism have. But it autism is such an interesting thing because it's impossible to describe. It expresses itself in so many ways. What do you want people to learn during Autism Awareness Month about autism?
Well, I think, and congratulations on the movie. You know, it's a great avenue to have and for people to see for Autism Awareness Month around the world. But I think those with autism also, as you can tell from Deej, is, you know, they are very capable, very caring people. And, you know, they are just welcoming opportunities that may come their way. And that if it even takes a little bit of extra patience from people to give them that opportunity, you know, that's something that they always welcome. And I know when we have panels at our conference or our employment conference with those with autism, that's one of the things they always say is it may take me just a little more time to process something with my brain, but if you just give me the patience, I'm very capable to do whatever is asked.
You are the mother of a daughter who is autistic, so this is a lived experience for you as well. What do you want people who don't have that experience to know?
You know, I'm the parent of three children, and the oldest has autism and epilepsy. And, you know, one of the things that I think is important for other families and other parents to know is that sometimes, you know, even if you're in the grocery store or someplace and somebody is having a meltdown or just having a bad day, you know, to just realize that maybe things are not as they seem, that, you know, it can be autism. And autism, sometimes people will see something on TV that maybe portrays it in a way that it's not always present in a family. And to, you know, just show some courtesy and show some kindness and know maybe this family is going through, you know, just a hard time, and autism is getting the best of the child or adult at that time. But there are other times that it's a joy and an experience to see life through their eyes and how they see things, you know, very differently.
I mentioned autism is expressed in so many different ways, depending on every individual. There can be a real challenge for people who are autistic, but on the higher functioning end of the spectrum, to get the services they need. Tell me about those challenges.
You know, that is correct. In Iowa, there's a couple of ways, you know, that funding is set up for assistance, and one of those ways is to qualify with an IQ. And so if you have a higher IQ and you're more capable, you do not always receive the services or waiver services, as we call them in Iowa, to receive some of those things. And sometimes with just some job coaching or a little extra assistance maybe on interviewing when you're an adult, you know, some of those things would be so helpful and yet can be very difficult sometimes to qualify for those services when you are more capable.
There was recently a mental health bill that was signed by the governor of Iowa, and there have been a lot of people, a lot of conversations about this film and whether or not it goes far enough. What do you feel it accomplishes for those with autism?
Well, I think, and are you talking about the children's mental health?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. You know, it's a start, which, you know, in our state, there are some deficits with mental health right now, which I think all of us recognize. And so it is a start to hopefully build from what has just started and to continue to work from that to increase mental health assistance. You know, also for adults, they now have the crisis centers, which may be a stepping stone before, you know, ending up into a hospital setting. And so that also was a great accomplishment this year with the legislative session. And so it's, you know, it gives us something maybe to be hopeful for. And but obviously we need to, yeah, build and increase both of those a little more.
You're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Autism Society of Iowa this year. What do you see as your main challenges going forward?
I think right now one of our main challenges in the state of Iowa that we've been working heavily on since the situation in LaPorte City is the safety training for first responders, for families that maybe have a child that wanders. We have always done and presented safety trainings in the summers, but, you know, within the last couple of weeks, there's been a big emphasis on that. Captain Mark Logston, who helps us with our safety training, who's also a parent, has been working pretty heavily on getting out some DVDs and some, you know, other materials that can help for first responders as well. And so right now that's been a project that has been pretty dear to us. We also have, you know, obviously some family activities coming up for Autism Awareness Month. And then we also have been working a lot on our Autism and Employment Conference, which will be in September, involving our board members who have autism to help us to see what would be helpful for those young adults and adults that are looking for employment.
Chris Steinmetz, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Chris Steinmetz, Executive Director of the Autism Society of Iowa. They have a fundraiser coming up this weekend. It's Tour de Falls, a bicycling and running event in Waterloo, Iowa, starting Friday night with a social and then the biking and running events on Saturday morning. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.